Okay, it's good to see everybody again for the evening Bhagavad Gita, or morning, depending on where you are in the world, Bhagavad Gita discussion. I think we are ready to go. Oh, that's a nice view of the path around Govardhan. So, let's see, 15 people so far. Okay, so we'll chant Jai Radha Madhava. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Ballabha Kiribadadhadi Gopi Jana Balaruba Giribadadhadi Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Manachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Mala Ma Giribada Haldi Gopi Jana Malabha Giri Varadhauri Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhuva Kunja Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravatikacharya All Sutta Sutashi Shimad, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Chananana Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananta Gaudi Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Se Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sridvaita Gadadha, Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna, Gopi, Gopinath, Shyama Kunda, Radha Kunda, Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavanam Ki Jai, Navadiptam Ki Jai, Jagadavasami Ki Jai, Yamunamai Ki Jai, Shrimati Dulasi Devi Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Om. All glories the assembled devotees, All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories, the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru in Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasadaya. Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Namami Namaste. Saraswati Devi Gaurani Pajani. Nibhishesha Srinivali. Paschacha Deja Tardi. So, Omagana Tumidanda Shak Ananchina Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances at the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So now we'll go ahead to the Bhagavad Gita. And share the screen. And we are on the 13th chapter. And we're going to continue with text 17 and the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Alrighty. So, 13 chapters, rather, philosophical. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam eva chastitam bhutapatriyar cha tasgiham grasnishu prabhavishnu cha avibhaktam without division cha also bhuteshu and all living beings vibhaktam divided eva as if cha also stitam situated Bhutabhatri, the maintainer of all living entities. Cha also, tat that. Gayam, to be understood, Grashnishu, Grashishnu, sorry, Grashishnu. Devouring, Prabhavishnu, developing, cha also. Translation, although the super soul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Wow. So, let me explain. So, when we talk about the super soul in everyone's heart, it's not that the super soul is materially situated. He's in the heart. His presence is manifest in the heart, like a reflection of the sun manifested on or in each and every lake or body of water. That's the point. But in this particular manifestation, he's able to give us intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness, interact with us, be aware of everything happening with us, etc. So it appears like he's divided, but actually he's just one super soul. And then another point is, he is the maintainer of every living entity. And it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. So this is in relationship to Lord Vishnu. We talk about the guna avatars. There's different types of avatars. The word avatar means to descend. And so many varieties of avatars. There's Shakyavesha avatars, which means ordinary living entities who have been given a specific power by God. There's Leela avatars, that means Krishna comes down and does some really playful stuff. There's Yuga avatars, Krishna comes in each and every Yuga to teach the Yuga Dharma. And in this particular case, we're talking about the Guna avatars. Guna avatars generally refers to Vishnu as the maintainer. And this is the first section of this sentence right here, although he is the maintainer of every living entity. So that's Lord Vishnu. But then we have, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. So that's in relationship to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Because devours means destroys. It's like when you devour something. Usually, you use this word devour in terms of eating. He really devoured that prasadam. So, in another sense, devours could mean like destroyed. Like in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we have the universal form devouring everybody. Everybody is rushing into his proverbial mouths and being destroyed. So, generally, that is the duty of Lord Shiva. And developing is generally the duty of Lord Brahma. So why is it that Krishna, or the Super Soul, or Vishnu, is being described as someone who devours and develops all? Because he appears as the avatars, the guna avatars, even though the guna avatars referring to Lord Shiva and Brahma are not Vishnu Tattva in the category of God, but God is acting through them to do those things. That's what a Shakta Vesh avatar means. Shakta Vesh means there's Shakti or potency, and that Shakti is invested in a particular individual. Like Srila Prabhupada he is a Shakta Vesh avatar. So Krishna has invested the preaching, spiritual, bhakti, shakti, potency in Srila Prabhupada. However, Srila Prabhupada is not God. He's a servant of God, but he's empowered. Now, any of us, if we surrender to Krishna, which is kind of difficult, we can also become Shaktivesh avatars. Now, in our case, it doesn't mean we came from the spiritual world, but it means the Shakti is empowering, investing us in Krishna's potency, so we're able to accomplish something. And that's a fact. Actually, whatever we do is coming because of Krishna's potency. We talked about that yesterday with the question of Krishna says he's the doer, and we're not actually the doer. We mentioned that. Because Krishna is actually doing everything, we're just desiring. Man proposes, God disposes. So, anyway, so this is the explanation of it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. So, in the purport, Prabhupada explains, the Lord is situated in everyone's heart as the super soul. Does this mean that he has become divided? No, actually he is one. The example is given of the sun. The sun at the meridian is situated in its place. But if one goes for 5,000 miles in all directions and asks, where's the sun? Everyone will say that it is shining on his head. In the Vedic literature, this example is given to show that although he is undivided, he is situated as if divided. Also, it is said in the Vedic literature that one Vishnu is present everywhere by his omnipotence, just as the sun appears in many places to many persons. And the Supreme Lord, although the maintainer of every living entity, devours everything at the time of annihilation. As we mentioned before, he manifests Lord Shiva to do that. Lord Shiva is in charge of the destruction, the mode of ignorance. Lord Shiva is not in the mode of ignorance. He's in charge of the mode of ignorance. This was confirmed in the 11th chapter when the Lord said that he had come to devour all the warriors assembled at Kurukshetra. He also mentioned that in the form of time, he devours also. Two alsos in that sentence. He's not in need of two alsos. He is the annihilator, the killer of all. When there is creation, he develops all from the original state, and at the time of annihilation, he devours them. The Vedic hymns confirm the fact that he is the origin of all living entities and the rest of all. The rest. I mean, the others, the rest, where the living entities rest. After creation, everything rests in his omnipotence, and after annihilation, everything again returns to rest in him. These are the confirmations of Vedic hymns. Yato va imani bhutani jayante yena ajatani jivanti yat prayantya visham vishanti tad brahma tad vigyasasva. That's from Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1. Text 18. Jyotisham api tat jyotis tamasa paramuchyate jnanam gyayam jnanagamyam vidyasarvasya vishtitam. Jyotisham and all luminous objects, api also, tat that, jyotihi, the source of light, Amasaha, the darkness, param, beyond. Uchate is said, jnanam, knowledge, gayam, to be known, jnanagamyam, to be approached by knowledge, vidhi, in the heart, sarvasha, of everyone, vishtitaha, situated. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. It means not manifested to us. That doesn't mean he doesn't have any manifestation. He is knowledge, he's the object of knowledge, and he's the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. This, of course, is the super soul being described. Okay. Purport, the super soul, the supreme personality of God, is the source of light in all luminous objects like the sun, moon, and stars. In the Vedic literature, we find that in the spiritual kingdom, there's no need of sun, moon, because so on, or moon, because of the effulgence of the Supreme Lord is there. It's actually a verse of the Bhagavad Gita. tad vasyate suryo nasashanko napavaka yadgatva nanibartam teta dhamma paramamamai. Krishna says, in the spiritual world, there's no need of sunlight, moonlight, or electricity, because everything there is self-luminous. In the material world, that Brahma-jyoti, the Lord's spiritual effulgence, is covered by the mahatattva, the material elements. Therefore, in this material world, we require the assistance of sun, moon, electricity, etc., for light. But in the spiritual world, there's no need of such things. It is clearly stated in the Vedic literature that because of his luminous effulgence, everything is illumined. It is clear, therefore. Someone sending me a message, some problem. Only send me a message if there's a problem. Yeah, I got that message ready, but please only send me messages during the class if there's a problem with the sound or something like that. Don't send me invitations in the middle of class. It just disturbs the whole class. In the material world, that Brahmacharya is covered by the Mahatattva, the material elements. Therefore, in this material world, we require the assistance of sun, moon, electricity, etc. for light. We went over this. It is clear, therefore, that his situation is not in the material world. He is situated in the spiritual world, which is far, far away in the spiritual sky. That is also confirmed in the Vedic literature. Adityavarnam tamasa parastat. That's from the Shvetasvatara Upanishad 3.8. He is just like the sun, eternally luminous, but he is far, far beyond the darkness of this material world. His knowledge is transcendental. The Vedic literature confirms that Brahman is concentrated transcendental knowledge. I'll repeat that. That's very interesting. The Vedic literature confirms that Brahman is concentrated transcendental knowledge. To one who is anxious to be transferred to that spiritual world, knowledge is given by the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. One Vedic mantra, Shvetasvatara Upanishad 6.18, says, Tamha Devam, Atma Buddhi Prakasham. If there's another message, even after I requested that, it better be something really important. It was an apology. That's another message. Just interrupts the class. So to one who's anxious to be transferred to that spiritual world, knowledge is given by the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. Tama Devam Atma Buddhi Prakasham Mukshur Vai Shalanam Aham Prapadye. One must surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he at all wants liberation. As far as the goal of ultimate knowledge is concerned, it is also confirmed in Vedic literature, Tam Eva Viditvati Mrityumeti. Only by knowing him can one surpass the boundary of birth and death. That's from the Shvetasvatara Upanishad. He is situated in everyone's heart as the Supreme Controller. The Supreme has legs and hands distributed everywhere, and this cannot be said of the individual soul. We heard that before in this chapter. Therefore, there are two knowers of the field of activity, the individual soul and the super soul, must be admitted. One's hands and legs are distributed locally, but Krishna's hands and legs are distributed everywhere. This is confirmed in the Shvetasvatara Upanishad 3.17, Sarvasya Prabhu Ishanam Sarvasya Sharanam Brahat. That Supreme Personality of God and Super Soul is the Prabhu or Master of all living entities. Therefore, he is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. So there is no denying the fact that the Supreme Super Soul and the individual soul are always different. Great text. 19. Iti kshetram tathagyanam geyam choktam samasataha magbhakta iti vigyaya magbhavayo papadyate. Iti thus, kshetram, the field of activities of the body, tata also, jnanam, knowledge, geyam, the knowable, cha also, Uktam described Samasataha in summary, Matvakta, my devotee, I taught all this. Vidaya, after understanding, Matvavaya, to my nature, Upapadyate, attains. Translation, thus the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable, have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain my nature. So again, the body, which is the field of activities, knowledge or the knowable, is actually Krishna, and knowledge means the difference between matter and spirit. Knowledge means also the knowledge of Krishna. Knowledge also means knowledge of the body, like the knower of the body. So all this has been described in this chapter. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. Purport, the Lord has described in summary the body, knowledge, and the knowable. This knowledge is of three kinds, the knower, the knowable, and the process of knowing. Okay. Combined, these are called vijnana, or the science of knowledge. Vijnana is also translated sometimes as realization. And Prabhupada also called it science many times. Perfect knowledge can be understood by the unalloyed devotees of the Lord directly. Others are unable to understand. The manas, that means people think that everything is one, say that at the ultimate stage, these three items become one, but the devotees do not accept this. In other words, the knowledge, the knower, what is knowable, and the process of knowing are all three separate things. Knowledge and the development of knowledge mean understanding oneself and Krishna consciousness. We are being led by material consciousness, but as soon as we transfer all consciousness to Krishna's activities and realize that Krishna is everything, then we attain real knowledge. In other words, knowledge is nothing but the preliminary stage of understanding devotional service perfectly. In the 15th chapter, this will be very clearly explained. And as we talked about before, I think many, many classes ago, there's actually three levels of spiritual knowledge. One is called Sambandha, the other one is Abhideya, the other one is Prayojana. Sambandha means basically to know what this body is, to know what Krishna is, to know what the spiritual world is, to know what time is, to know what karma is, etc. And to know the relationship between all those different things. This is knowledge. And so the second part of knowledge is basically is called Abhideya. That is, what do we do about this original knowledge that we just had about the relationships and all these different elements? What is the process to realize these things? What is the process of self-realization? What is the process of becoming happy? So, and that's called bhakti, and which begins with sadhana bhakti, actually vaidhi bhakti, which is part of sadhana bhakti, raganuga bhakti, which is part of sadhana bhakti, and ultimately prema bhakti. So anyway, so those are the different stages of knowledge. And of course, oh, I left out prayojana. Prayojana is actually the stage of perfect realization, in which one is able to enter into one's eternal relationship with Krishna and be absorbed in that. It's the perfectional stage. So in the 15th chapter, this will be very clearly explained. Now to summarize, one may understand that verses 6 and 7, beginning from Mahabhutani and continuing through Chaitanya Dhriti, analyze the material elements and certain manifestations of the symptom of life. These combine to form the body or the field of activities. And verses 8 through 12, from Amanditvam through Tatvagyanartha Darshanam, describe the process of knowledge, in other words, the qualities that are manifest by someone in knowledge, for understanding both types of the knower of the field of activities, namely the soul and the supersoul. Then verses 13 through 18, beginning from Anadi Matparam and continuing through Riddhi Sarvasya Vishtitam, describe the soul and the supreme Lord or super soul. Thus, three items have been described: the field of activity, body; the process of understanding and both the soul and supersoul. It is especially described here that only the unalloyed devotees of the Lord can understand these three items clearly. So for these devotees, Bhagavad Gita is fully useful. It is they who can attain the supreme goal, the nature of the supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, only devotees, not others, can understand Bhagavad Gita and derive the desired results. So I just want to comment on this statement here. It is especially described here that only the, and the operative word here is unalloyed devotees of the Lord. That means basically pure devotees of the Lord. So can understand these three items clearly. Does that mean that we cannot understand those three items clearly unless we are unalloyed devotees of the Lord? That's a dilemma. In other words, is our understanding clear? Well, by Prabhupada's mercy, because we have taken shelter of an unalloyed devotee of the Lord, a pure devotee of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada, we are able to understand these things clearly. And Prabhupada has actually given it to us in a very clear fashion. But it's a question of being devoted to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Actually, Guru Bhakti is the most essential item in advancing in Krishna consciousness. Guru Bhakti means devotion to the Guru. Because the Guru represents Krishna, we cannot see Krishna at the present time. Of course, we can hear Krishna through the words of the Guru, through the words of other pure devotees. But it's easier to relate to the spiritual master in a very real sense. Because if we try directly to relate to Krishna without the intercession of the spiritual master, then we'll simply be projecting our material conceptions upon the Absolute. In other words, we will think that Krishna's nature, Krishna's activities, Krishna's form is completely similar to our nature, form, activities, and experience in this material world. And that's not a fact. Krishna is actually inconceivable. The word is achincha and unlimited. Anyway, so there's no question of really comprehending Krishna fully until one is actually a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we may fool ourselves or be fooled or cheat ourselves, as we're talking about the four defects of the conditioned soul, one of which is the cheating propensity. We may cheat ourselves into thinking we're more advanced than we actually are, and what we're meditating on may not be reality. Sometimes we think, you know, I know what my spiritual identity is. I must be a gopi, or I must be a tree, or I must be a coward boy. And we begin to meditate on that. But that's far from reality. So we're actually meditating on our mental concoction at that particular point. And that is not a good idea. So therefore, Krishna appears, of course, as the deity, and is the spiritual master. Not that the spiritual master is Krishna, but Krishna appears as the spiritual master. So our devotion is taken from by the spiritual master and given through the disciplic succession to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, so now we'll read text 20. It's an interesting point. So don't worry if you are not fully surrendered or unalloyed, as Prabhupada said here. Well, that word unalloyed is quite interesting. And it refers to metal. Just like if you have an alloy of metal, for example, gold. Generally, if you get a gold ring, it's an alloy of gold. It's not pure gold. The reason being is the pure gold is actually too soft. So you need to put some other element in it. So they put some other element in gold. Therefore, it's called 10 carat, 12 carat, 18 carat gold. But 24 carat gold is actually quite rare. That's unalloyed gold. And everything else is alloyed gold. So 24 karat Krishna consciousness is the only way to go back to Godhead. But by Prabhupada's mercy, we will be able to go back to Godhead. I was just hearing a memory of a particular devotee who was caring for Prabhupada's sister, Pishama. Prabhupada's sister looked almost exactly like Prabhupada in a female form, and she was so dedicated to Srila Prabhupada, you know, just 100% dedicated to Prabhupada. So after Prabhupada left the planet, she basically, in a short time, gave up eating and taking care of her body and just like decided to leave the planet because she could not bear the separation from her brother, Srila Prabhupada. So she was lying in bed, and basically the devotees asked her, what do you want? Do you want anything? Do you want water? Do you want food? And she said, basically, of course, she only spoke Bengali. He said, no. And then the devotees asked, do you want Prabhupada? She basically raised her head, yes. And so they were playing Prabhupada's tape over and over and over and over for her. And so gradually her physical strength dissipated. She was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And one day, the devotees were around her, understanding that she would soon leave this mortal frame. And they were chanting the Lord's holy name. And one devotee was holding her hand like that. And eventually, she motioned, or she began to move her lips. And this devotee put her ear to Pishama's mouth to try to hear what Pishama was saying. And Pishama basically went, Hare, and left this world. And as she left this world, this devotee actually had a vision that Pishama actually just like floated out of her body. And of course, that's the subtle body and the soul accompanied by the soul, or the soul accompanied by the subtle body, to be precise, left her body. And then this devotee had a vision that Prabhupada appeared and he extended his hand to her. And they were both very happy, and eventually they disappeared. So this devotee had the realization that Prabhupada will be there for us at the time of leaving our bodies. It's a very wonderful story of how dedicated Pishma was, that she couldn't bear to stay on this earth planet without her brother, Srila Prabhupada. Told the story that when they were young, they would fly kites. There's a particular holiday in India where everybody flies kites, so they would fly kites, and they would pray to Krishna that their kite would go higher than the other person. And so they had many wonderful pastimes, very close associates. She would cook for Prabhupada. Prabhupada even accepted her cooking, which was filled with mustard oil. Whew. Perhaps the heaviest oil you can imagine other than motor oil. It was filled with mustard oil. He was accepting it even when he was sick and he couldn't digest anything because of her devotion. I mean, she was just so devoted to Srila Prabhupada. So it would be nice if we had 1/10, 1/1,000,000th of that devotion to Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master. Then we'd be ready to do anything. And we couldn't bear the separation from Prabhupada and our spiritual master. So let's continue. Prakatim purusham chaiva vidya nari ubhavapi vikaram chagunam chaiva vidi prakati sambhavan. Prakatim, material nature, purusham, the living entities, cha also. Eva, certainly, vidi, you must know. Anadi, without beginning, ubhav, both. Api, also. Vikaran, transformations, cha also, gunan. The three modes of nature, cha also, eva certainly, vidi no, prakriti, material nature, sambhavan, produced of. So material nature and the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the modes of nature are, modes of matter, sorry, are products of material nature. So this is an interesting verse. Material nature and the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. So in one sense, we understand there is a creation of the material world, then there's a destruction, then there's another creation, then there's a destruction, then there's another creation, then there's a destruction. This is actually cyclical. For example, we have the four seasons. We have winter, spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall, winter, spring, summer, fall. It's a circle. It's not linear. People in the Western world, they think in a linear fashion. Like there was one person asking Prabhupada the question I heard about 2 days ago. What's going to happen when the material world comes to an end or the earth is destroyed? Because obviously, at a certain point, the earth will be destroyed. And he said, what will happen to those people who didn't make it? And Prabhupada didn't really directly answer his question because it was a foolish question anyway. So, but the point is that even after destruction, there's another creation. Bhutva, bhutva. Praliyate, as the Bhagavad Gita says. Again and again, there's a creation and a destruction. So, what does it mean to say the material nature, I'm skipping over living entities right now, material nature is beginningless? Because even though there's a destruction, the material nature remains in a nation state, that is, sorry about that, in a potential state. It remains there. Just like you have energy, you have kinetic energy, potential energy, all sorts of different energies you have. So there's potential energy. I'll explain what potential energy is. Let's say I take you up, and we walk up a big mountain. So this, if you were to jump from the mountain, that would be some kinetic energy at that point. But before you jump, it's potential. Got it? It's potential energy. It hasn't occurred yet, but it's stored up as potential energy. So anyway, so the material nature, at the time of the dissolution, doesn't cease to exist, it actually manifests as what we call the pradana. Pradana means basic, you know, like a piece of clay that hasn't been shaped yet. And when it's manifest, the piece of clay, the material energy, the pradana, becomes activated by the injection of the Lord's glance, saikshita. And then you have the modes of nature, the living entities are injected in, the Lord's various expansions, like the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and Shiradakshaya Vishnu are injected in. So anyway, material nature is beginningless. And living entities, we know, for the soul there's neither birth nor death, nor having once been, does he ever cease to be, he's unborn, primeval, not slain when the body is slain, najayate mriyate bhakadachan. Simple thing, second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So that's the explanation of the first sense. So, but these things become transformed. The material nature becomes transformed by the modes, by the glance of the Lord. And we, although we're the soul is not transformed, but our consciousness becomes transformed by contact with material nature. Karanam guna sangasya sadasat janma jonishu. The soul never becomes transformed, but the manifestation of the souls within this world, that's a transformation. That's a really important point here. Just like this word, let me find the word in the... Vikara, that's the word I was looking for. Vikara means transformation. So the material nature becomes transformed. The soul, in essence, doesn't become transformed, but its consciousness becomes transformed by contact with the material nature. So purport. By the knowledge given in this chapter, one can understand the body, the field of activities, and the knowers of the body, both the individual soul and the supersoul. The body is the field of activity and is composed of material nature. The individual soul that is embodied and enjoying the activities of the body is the Purusha, or the living entity. He is one knower and the other is the supersoul. Of course, it is to be understood that both the supersoul and the individual entity are different manifestations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The living entity is in the category of his energy. That means we are the energy of Krishna. And the super soul is in the category of his personal expansion. In other words, we are not Krishna. We have our individuality. Super soul is an expansion of Krishna, non-different from Krishna, but Krishna acting in a different capacity, in a different mood. Just like you and I and every living entity that I know of, unless they're completely in ignorance, has different manifestations of his or her personality. Sometimes we have the manifestation of being a manager. Sometimes we have the manifestation of being a preacher. Sometimes we have the manifestation of fixing things. It's like today we're trying to figure out, you know, what's causing the leak in the kitchen. Not my kitchen, the temple kitchen. So we appear in different ways at different times. But Krishna can appear in different ways at the same time. That's a difference. Millions, infinite numbers of different ways simultaneously. Infinite. Both material nature and the living entities are eternal. That is to say, they existed before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy. So in other words, material, this is exactly what I was saying before, material nature existed before the creation. That may appear contradictory, but it existed in its nascent state, that is, a dormant state before the creation. It was there, it just wasn't shaped. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Supreme Lord, and so also are the living entities. But the living entities are the superior energy. So we're the superior energy, but we can choose to act almost like the inferior energy by associating with the inferior energy. It's just like if someone gets drunk, then they don't act normally, right? I don't know. I've never been drunk my whole life, but I've seen it. When I was in the university, I would get up in the morning, a little later in the morning, on Sunday morning after everybody had been out Saturday night. Not me. I did not do that. Not that I was pure, but I just didn't do any of that garbage. And the hallway was strewn with bodies, not dead bodies, but bodies of highly intoxicated people or people experiencing what is called a hangover. That means the next day. And their consciousness had been changed by contact with the moment of ignorance. Especially the night before, their consciousness had been severely changed. Both the living entities and material nature existed before this cosmos was manifested. Material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, and when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of Mahatattva. That's exactly what I describe as the Pradhana, a manifest state, and Mahavishnu manifests it. It comes out of his body. Similarly, the living entities are also in him, and because they are conditioned, they are averse to serving the Supreme Lord. Thus, they are not allowed to enter into the spiritual sky. The doorkeepers there, bouncers. Chai and Vijay, they're actually the two best bouncers in the spiritual world. But with the coming forth of material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world, become reformed. Become reformed. That is the mystery. So this is what this material world is. We're given a chance. If it wasn't for this material world, we wouldn't have a chance. We just have to be in suspended animation eternamente. It means eternally. That is the mystery of the material creation. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but due to this rebellious nature, he is conditioned within material nature. That's us. It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come into contact with material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. In the scriptures, the Lord says that those attracted by this material nature are undergoing a hard struggle for existence, but we should know it with certainty from the descriptions of these few verses that all transformations and influences of material nature by the three modes are also productions of material nature. In other words, everything that transforms material nature doesn't make it anything else other than material nature. And I'll say, mention something that Prabhupada actually talked about in the early times in the movement. Prabhupada had to deal with people who were taking LSD, which is an hallucinogen. So people taking LSD were thinking they're having a spiritual experience. But actually, when you manipulate the material nature, you don't get spirit. That would be kind of stupid. Even with the yoga practices, postures and everything like that, you don't get spirit. You just get a chance to control your senses and ultimately try to focus on spirit. But the yoga practices, at least hatha yoga practices, in and of themselves don't give you spirit, but they're preliminary to that. Now, as far as taking drugs, it's not even preliminary to that. You cannot change the chemistry of the body either by breathing in or breathing out or by running races or doing yoga to get spirit. Because it says here, all transformations of variety in respect to living entities are due to the body. And in the previous sense, all transformations and influence of material nature by the three modes are also productions of material nature. So you got material nature in, material nature out. It makes sense. As far as spirit is concerned, living entities are all the same. Whoops, what happened here? There was a link to something and we went ahead. Okay, so I think we have time to read the next verse. Karya karana kartritve hetu prakriti uchite purusha sukadukhanam bhaktritve hetu uchite. Karya, effect, karana, and cause, kartritve in the matter of creation, hetu, the instrument, prakriti, material nature. Uchite is said to be purushaha, the living entity, sukha of happiness, sukhanam, and distress. Bhaktritve, an enjoyment, hetu, the instrument, uchite is said to be. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. Pretty easy to understand. So nature is set up in a certain way. For example, there are laws of nature, right? We have different laws of nature. Now, of course, we have gravity. I'm not going to describe gravity as a law of nature because Prabhupada said it's not absolute. But let's say you have the force of gravity. So that's it's a cause and effect thing. Like if you throw a ball, it'll fall down. However, if you decide to jump off of a cliff, you're the one who's responsible for the sufferings. Of course, I don't think you'll have too many enjoyments unless you're actually hang gliding off a cliff. All right, here's an example. You jump off without a parachute or wings or whatever like that, then suffering. And if you jump off with a parachute, then you enjoy. So your decision determines whether that particular cause and effect of gravity gives you enjoyment or suffering. Got it? That's pretty easy to understand. And of course, it works on a wider scale with karma. Purport. The different manifestations of body and senses among the living entities are due to material nature. There are 8,400,000 different species of life, and these varieties are creations of the material nature. They arise from the different sensual pleasures of the living entity, who thus desires to live in this body or that. When he is put into different bodies, he enjoys different kinds of happiness and distress. His material happiness and distress are due to his body and not to himself as he is. In other words, he's chosen his body through his activities, so he's responsible for his happiness and distress. In his original state, there's no doubt of enjoyment. Therefore, that is his real state. Because of the desire to lord it over material nature, in other words, you want to be the boss. He is in the material world. In the spiritual world, there's no such thing. The spiritual world is pure, but in the material world, everyone is struggling hard to acquire different kinds of pleasure for the bodies. Pleasures for the body. It might be more clear to state that this body is the effect of the senses. The senses are instruments for gratifying desire. Now, the sum total, body and instrument senses, are offered by material nature, and as will be clear in the next verse, the living entity is blessed or damned with circumstances according to his past desire and activity. According to one's desires and activities, material nature places one in various residential quarters, that means a particular body. The being himself is the cause of his attaining such residential quarters and his attendant enjoyment or suffering. In other words, his karma, to make it clear. Once placed in some particular kind of body, he comes under the control of nature because the body, being matter, acts according to the laws of nature. At that time, the living entity has no power to change that law. Suppose an entity is put into the body of a dog. As soon as he is put into the body of a dog, he must act like a dog. He cannot act otherwise. And the living entity is put into the body of a hog. Then he is forced to eat stool and act like a hog. Similarly, if the living entity is put into a body of a demigod, he must act according to his body. That is the law of nature. But in all circumstances, the supersoul is with the individual soul. Now, a human being doesn't have to follow the dictates of the body. I just want to make that clear. Although we have certain natural propensities, which is under Varnashram Dharma, that we will be happy if we're serving Krishna according to the nature of our body. That is explained in the Vedas, Mundaka Upanishad, as follows, Dva Suparna Sayuja Sakyaha. The Supreme Lord is so kind upon the living entity that he is always present, he always accompanies the individual soul in all circumstances, is present as the super soul or Paramatma. That's the Lord in the heart. Okay, so now we will take questions. Hold on 1 second. Now, you can unmute yourselves. So who has a question? Nobody has a question.
I do, Maharaj.
Okay, Joe.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Are you hearing the feedback or is that just me? Hang on, I'll put that away.
I'm not hearing any feedback.
Okay. So Krishna's talking about his expansion as the super soul here. So he's talking about himself. So why does he refer to himself in the third person, like his, as opposed to my? He's always talking, it's just an interesting
I think
way.
That's more or less a literary thing.
Right.
You know, I can think of instances when I would refer to myself in the third person. Like when Bhir Krishna Goswami goes to worship his deities in the morning. Anyway, he's being descriptive. And also it's an expansion of Krishna. So in each and every expansion of Krishna, it's the same person, but there's a different manifestation of activities, a different manifestation, even, I wouldn't want to use the word consciousness, but for lack of a better word, for example, when Krishna himself is Lord Balaram, who is his first expansion, sometimes Balaram is not even aware of what Krishna is doing. So there is some, because of pastimes, there is some differentiation between Krishna and his various manifestations. And how do we understand it? It's like a chincha. Again, I have to use that word, a chincha, that, you know, Krishna talks about himself and his other manifestations. And sometimes people will even write about themselves in third person, too. Like, I guess I'll write my autobiography in the third person. So just Krishna does it.
Okay.
That's the point. I guess we'll have to ask Krishna. But actually, in each and every manifestation or expansion, there is a little bit difference in mentality. What can we say? A difference in mentality. Even though they're the same person, there's a difference in mentality. I mean, just like when I'm doing something different than giving class, there's a difference in my psychology or mentality. And I won't actually be thinking about when I'm giving class, when I'm doing something different. So that's Krishna. All right? All right.
Thank
Anyway,
you.
that's a chincha. That's an easy way to answer any question. It's a chincha. It's inconceivable. So who else has a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj,
Jai
Dandavat
Parche.
Pranam.
Jai Oglesh Prabhupada. So.
Please accept my humble obeisances. Just a question there about how Krishna says that he's present in all the living entities as the Paramatma, the super soul. So and the that people the living entities or the soul has actually desired to be in a particular body because of their actions. Is there any does Krishna as a super soul help those other living entities that are not in the human form of life, I mean, or as they are going through their karma or maybe they don't accumulate
Yeah,
karma
well,
like that?
he is helping them. He's helping them or facilitating their activities in those particular types of bodies. Whoops, this phone keeps going off. He's facilitating their activities in those particular bodies, giving them also intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness. And ultimately, they're going through those experiences to help them come to the realization that this material world is not enjoyable. Like Prabhupada comments that if someone, let's say if someone is really addicted to intoxication, then they can take birth as a tree or something like that. And then as a tree, they get to stand for a long time. It's like real super intoxication to be a tree. You can imagine that. Imagine being a tree for hundreds of years or whatever period of time that is. So Krishna is also, along with those entities in non-human bodies, facilitating them in the their attempted exploitation of the material nature, and ultimately in their gradual elevation through the species of life. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
All right, thank you. So, who else has a question for us? Yes, Jagat. Jagat? Speaking
Yes,
now. Okay.
Super Soul is neutral, so does that mean he has no plan for our life or plan for
Yes. He has a plan. He has a plan to eventually push you to the point where you actually surrender.
But as far as the specifics of our life, he has no plan for.
No, that's not his plan. We make those decisions. He facilitates. He's the overseer and permitter. What do you say? A man proposes, God disposes. So it's
What
not that he
about.
plans out that Jagat, you're gonna cook the offering tomorrow, or you're supposed to cook breakfast this morning anyway.
But Isha Upanishad says that our sense of incompleteness is the fact that we don't realize that Krishna has a complete plan for our lives.
Yes, his complete plan is so that we become Krishna conscious, but the details are up to us. It's not that, Krishna's planning out that I was going to give today's class, and then Krishna's planning out that I went swimming earlier today. It's just that Krishna's planning somehow or other to get us to the point of surrendering to love him. That's what it means. I wouldn't say the details, that Krishna's just like has a script that we have to follow. Then we actually have to do away with free will at that point. Krishna's planning everything. Krishna's planning that's gonna
Aren't
do it.
there stories about devotees that have a destiny?
Destiny, what do you mean by destiny? I mean, I know what the word means, but what do you mean?
Well, not that every detail's planned out, but that Krishna has like something specific that he wants you to become in this life, or like that.
Oh, yeah. Like Arjuna, Krishna had planned that Arjuna would fight, but he could have changed that by deciding not to fight. It's not that the Bhagavad Gita was just simply a play and Arjuna was going to fight anyway. Arjuna did have a decision at the end, could have decided not to fight. Not that he would have, but he had the potential to decide not to fight. I mean, why would, if there wasn't that potential, then why would Krishna go through all that difficulty of trying to persuade him to fight? Other than saying it was for our benefit. I mean, you could say it was for our benefit. But anyway, I mean, Arjuna does have that free will. At any point, the potential is there. I mean, even Prabhupada pointed out that one may be in the spiritual world, but you can still fall down from the spiritual world. Potential is always there. Not that you will do it, hopefully not. But Prabhupada said that
he saw temples in the future. Temples were in the future. He was only separated by time.
Yeah, but he didn't see who was in charge of which temple. He never said, I saw Bir Krishna Maharaj in North Carolina, and he was worshiping Radha Galokananda. We were only separated by time. And Bir Krishna Maharaj would, have a lot of disciples or whatever. Would go to Fiji and Bir Krishna Maharaj would go. No, that's not a problem. You know, I made a lot of choices in my life. Yes, there was going to be a temple in North Carolina, whether I did it or not, but somehow or other I got the credit for it because I decided to do it. Just like Arjuna, in Arjuna's case, there was going to be victory for the Pandavas, or the Kurus were going to all be killed, but Arjuna was the one who decided to do it and get the credit. So like Prabhupada said one time, he was asked, if Lord Chaitanya wanted to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, why didn't he do it himself? And Prabhupada said he wanted to give him the credit. But the point is, let's say even in the case of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave that instruction to Prabhupada, but he also gave that instruction to a lot of other disciples. But Prabhupada was the one who decided to take that instruction. I mean, in one sense, you could say it was preordained or whatever. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't see it like that. Otherwise, he would have just given Prabhupada the instruction. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave that instruction to so many of his disciples who spoke English. He wanted Sridhar Maharaj to go to the Western world. But Sridhar Maharaj never did that, for one reason or other. So, therefore, the Krishna conscious movement was going to be spread in the Western world, and Prabhupada was the one who decided. It's not that Krishna just like planned out all these things, but Prabhupada took that decision to leave everything and come. Otherwise, you take it away from Prabhupada, his heroism, then Prabhupada simply becomes a puppet. You understand? Like Krishna just like manipulated things so that Prabhupada would do what he did. I mean, it's just like, it really takes away the glory from Prabhupada. Because the glory is that Prabhupada was the one who decided to do it. That's the glory. And Prabhupada could have not decided, but he was the one who decided. And so he fulfilled Krishna's plan. Yes, Krishna had a plan, but we're the ones who decide whether or not to be part of Krishna's plan. Otherwise, it just becomes like, you know, Krishna just put Prabhupada in place, you know, Prabhupada was supposed to do that, he must do that. And it's just like, I just can't see Prabhupada like that. You know, Prabhupada as a living entity with free will, pure devotee, of course, as were some of Prabhupada's godbrothers were also pure devotees. Prabhupada did not say that nobody was a pure devotee but him. But Prabhupada was the one who took up the task like that. And that's the heroic thing. Krishna gave so many people the opportunity, and Prabhupada was the one who took the opportunity. was they say, opportunity knocks but once. And so in my mind, Prabhupada chose to do it. It wasn't simply, you know, he wasn't simply a puppet that was being manipulated by Krishna. He chose to do it. And if Prabhupada hadn't chosen to do it, Krishna could have done it with someone else. But Prabhupada showed his greatness by choosing. You know, Prabhupada personally admits that he was conflicted at a certain point. Like when he had these dreams about his spiritual master telling him to take sannyas, Prabhupada said he was horrified. You know, he had several dreams. He was basically fighting against the dreams, against the, not against the order of his spiritual master, but fighting against what he saw in the dream. So that was, but that's his heroism. I mean, without opposition, without making the choice, without taking a risk, there's no heroic activity executed. It's simply, you know, it's just simply, what is it? Just easy. You know, it's not heroic at all. It's like someone saying, will you eat this plate of prasadam? There's nothing heroic about eating a plate of prasadam. Isn't it? Nothing heroic. Unless you eat too many sweets and you're trying to, and you may get diabetes and heart disease. That's pretty heroic. I decided not to be that type of hero. So yeah, that's, you know, that's the whole discussion about free will versus predestination and everything like that. And I really sincerely believe that Prabhupada, he was conflicted and he decided to do it. Otherwise, Prabhupada just becomes like a puppet at that point without him struggling. You know, it's not, anyway, that's my opinion. So, good question. Any other questions or comments by anyone before we...
Hare Krishna. Break?
That sounds like Nalini Kant. Oh, your new name is Radha Padma. You're on her Facebook account. You underwent a change. Okay. So what's up?
Gurudev, two follow-up questions can I ask?
Yeah.
Like we also hear so many times from you and from others as well that pure devotees are under the control of Krishna, completely under control of Krishna. So how do
they're
I...
Under, they're under the control of Krishna's internal potency.
That's
right. I hesitate to say that they're under the control of Krishna. They're under the control of Daivam Prakritim Ashrita.
So how do I understand what we just discussed, like pure devotees, like they are under control of Krishna and same time...
No, they're under the control of their Daivam Prakritim Ashrita, Krishna's internal potency. I mean, I may say they're under Krishna's control, which is true in one sense, but they still have individuality. They're not controlled in the same sense that a puppeteer controls the puppets or a marionetteer controls the marionettes. Just to be specific and clear about it.
Okay, good.
There's free will in the spiritual world. I mean, it's not that Krishna's controlling in the sense of like, you know, moving their hands and everything like that. It's that there's free will. I mean, but everything they do is under the control of love or bhakti, bhakti. And in one sense, bhakti is independent. I mean, Vishwanath Chakravarti talks about this, how bhakti is independent and is not given by Krishna, but is given by Krishna's devotees.
Oh, yes.
So they're actually, in one sense, you could say they're controlled by love. In that sense, they're controlled by Krishna. Because if Krishna wants something, they do it. Actually, it was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur who said something very interesting. He said, basically, yeah, I'm just paraphrasing. He said, it's not that we are interested in Krishna. The only reason we are interested in Krishna is because Radharani is interested in him. Oh. It's an interesting statement. In other words, he was showing his position as a gopi, you know, because he is exclusively devoted to Radharani. And his interest in Krishna has to do with Radharani, not separate. He made that statement. It's a really interesting statement. We are interested in serving Radharani. So in other words, we're under the control. Daivam Prakritim Ashrita. We've taken shelter of Daivi Prakriti. That means the internal potency of the Lord. Hopefully. And in this way, we're controlled by Krishna. Because we're controlled by love. A devotee is not controlled literally, you know, by Krishna, but controlled by his love for Krishna. And that's Daivam Prakriti. It's not direct control. It's control through love or bhakti. Is that clear?
Yes, Gurudev. Thank you very much. Gurudev, one more question. What Abha Chaitanya Prabhu asked, how about ghosts? Like, we also say that ghosts are spirits, so where is Paramatma in their situation?
He's in their heart. Paramatma doesn't leave the living entity, even the subtle body. He stays with the living entity as the living entity transmigrates, the subtle body transmigrates from one gross body to another. Doesn't leave you. Don't worry. Okay. When you become a ghost, Paramatma will stay with you.
I'm already a ghost.
You're already a ghost. It reminds me of that story where Prabhupada said, this is a Gopal Bhan story, that they wanted to fool Gopal Bhan and convince him that he was a ghost. So there was like a conspiracy. Everybody who we came across said, you become a ghost. So after a while, he believed it.
Yes.
This is interesting that if you hear something enough times, you believe it. Mm-hmm. That also plays, is utilized in politics by politicians. Of course, politicians use politics. We have an amazing politician in the United States who should remain nameless. And he keeps saying the same, I don't want to use a French word, but he says the same garbage over and over again, and then his people, they believe it. And we find something similar with Hitler in World War II. You know, you say the same thing over and over again. People believe it. Tell a lie enough times, and then it becomes believed by a lot of people. And you're very, very dangerous, this world. Anyway, so this person, Gopal Bhan, he was told, you become a ghost, and he thought, now I've become a ghost. So we should tell you, you become a devotee. Now I become a devotee. We'll convince you. You are a devotee, Nalini Kant. You are one. You are one. You will listen to everything I say. When I count to three, you will do whatever I say. Anyway. Okay. Okay, on that happy note, I think we should end that. Thank you very much. We'll see everybody at the same time tomorrow evening. All glories to Shiva.